Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering all the narratives that matter. If you're watching on YouTube, definitely hit that subscribe button. If you're watching or listening on any other platform, be sure to hit that follow button, leave a review. Also follow our socials at Not Even D2 on Instagram, X, follow our YouTube shorts, all of that. We got a lot of content always coming out from each episode, so we definitely appreciate all that support. No special guest today, just Ruta and I talking. It's the year anniversary of the pod, which is just crazy to think about. But before we talk more about the pod, I mean, I know you're a big Knicks fan, and the Knicks just had a really big trade with Karl-Anthony Towns going there for Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo. So I'm just curious a little about your thoughts with that trade.
It was definitely – you were actually the first person to tell me, or I was like – like, I didn't even see the notification on my phone because usually my phone's on Do Not Disturb. But I saw your text message and you're like, big trade. I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, and you're like, cat to the Knicks. I'm like, wait, what? So then I checked Twitter. I see the Shams report. And I was at my team. I was at my friend's house, Hagen Foley, on the Utica men's basketball team. And we had the team over and we were all talking about the trade and like the positives and negatives. Mm-hmm. So my opinion on it, it sucks to lose DiVincenzo. I think he was a really like key piece for us in the playoffs this year. Like, he balled out and made a lot of like big shots when we needed it. So I think that kind of sucks. But if you think about it, you got Brunson, Hart, Bridges, Ananobi, Cat could be potentially your starting five. Or if you want to go big, you go Brunson, Ananobi, Mikal, Bridges, Cat, Mitch Robb. Like, that's a pretty good five. That I like that five, especially Cat, you know, doesn't really dominate the ball that much. Like, he could shoot a lot of catch and shoot threes and whatnot. But I'm excited for it, bro, but definitely a little skeptical too at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, first thing I wanted to talk about with the trade is like DiVincenzo, he means so much. Like, obviously he had a great playoff run, but also with those Villanova guys, I feel like they're going to be hurt from that, and that might not sit as well with them. But to talk more about like the basketball side of things, I think it really just comes down to how much better people think Cat is than Julius Randle. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it's clear everybody thinks that Cat is better, but is he enough to get rid of DiVincenzo as well? And I think that the problems that were brought up with, you know, Brunson and Julius Randle being both like heavy ball usage, always having the ball in their hands, that is like no more problem with that, because now we got Cat just coming off screens, being able to move the ball a little bit more. And like you said, they can go to two different starting fives, which bring a lot of different variety. And I think that this is an upgrade for both teams too. So I think the Timberwolves are going to have to figure some things out with Ant and Julius Randle. But I think anytime you can get a deeper lineup and, you know, mix things up, maybe they didn't think that they had the pieces to make it to, you know, the highest level. So I always respect teams trying to get better. And overall, I think it was a good trade. But I mean, a year of the pod, bro, that's insane. Like, it says 10-5, 2023. I dropped with Casey Curran, 10-2, 2023. I dropped the trailer. And it's like actually insane to think about, you know, my life at that time period, who was involved in my life, how things have changed. Like, a lot has changed. I didn't really know the direction of the pod. It was kind of just a free-for-all. And it's definitely fulfilling, like, seeing all the work that has, like, the hard work that has been put into success and how we continue to grow. And a big part of that is through the addition of you. So I definitely got to give you a lot of kudos and respect to you. But I want to hear, like, your thoughts. I know you weren't here for the whole year, but a lot has gone through and you've been through a lot with the pod. So just talk to me about that.
Man, that's love, bro. That's love. Appreciate that, man. I appreciate you letting me do it, bro. I mean, you took a risk yourself too. This was your baby, bro. I mean, you started it. You know what I mean? So I got a lot of respect for you opening up and letting me hop on. But I love what you just said, bro. Like, it's really interesting. Like, just the whole journey of the podcast, like you're 100% right. Like, thinking back to before I started doing this with you, like where I was at, what my mind space was. Like, I could still remember, like, seeing your idea and then having a conversation with my mom about it and like walking and talking with her, like, I think this is a great idea that this kid did. And like, I want to like hit him up. Like, I still remember those conversations. And I don't know if I talked about it much, like, but when we first started doing episodes, like, I was hurt. Like, I had torn my meniscus. And to be honest with you, bro, like, hopping on air, talking to guests, texting you every day, like, it really kept my mind right when those days were, like, really tough. You know, obviously, we ended up winning the chip that year, which made it so much sweeter when you look back at the year, 100%, no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, like, doing the podcast allowed me to express my love for basketball during a time when I couldn't do it. I couldn't play basketball. So, like, just for that, like, I got a lot of love for you, bro, for letting me do it. But it's definitely been a crazy journey. We have more words to say, I'm sure. So, but, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely love between us, bro. Like, one thing that I didn't expect out of you joining, because, like, you talk about you remember those exact moments. I remember getting the text, and I was with a friend. Like, they were kind of telling me I should hear you out for what it is. Because at first, like you said, this is my baby. This was my baby that I wanted for myself. So when you text me, I was like, I'm good. But, like, one thing I didn't expect is our relationship to continue to grow and evolve with the pod. Like, I just expected it to just be, we get on air, we do our thing, and then, like, we're not really that close, but, like, for real, really one of my best friends now.
Yeah, facts, bro.
And it's also crazy to think about, like, where the podcast started. I dropped a Casey, and my nerves, my emotions were, like, I couldn't explain the feeling that I was feeling during that time. And I used to text people all the time, yo, you trying to get on the pod? And it was no answer or getting flazed. And then a few months later, when you and I continue to grow now, it's people asking us to get on the pod. So that's just insane how much of a name and brand we've created ourselves. And I mean, one thing that I definitely like always have in the back of my mind, you said this in the episode that we first created when it was just you and I. And you were like, there's no limit to how far this pod can grow. And that's something that I think about all the time. Like, when I first dropped Casey, I was not thinking it would be anywhere where it is right now. And now this is something that, like, maybe could be a job that we pursue for the rest of our life, which is also crazy to think about. But, I mean, I got a few questions about, you know, some of your favorite episodes or people that, like, you definitely remember were big episodes for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, before you ask any of those questions, I mean, I meant it when I said it back then, bro. Like, I'm not going to put any limits on this. Like, you know me, like, you know, like, I have a tendency to like not dream, but like, just kind like,
creative.
Just like create. Yeah. I'm always like thinking, bro. And sometimes I'll send you voice messages throughout the day of like a minute and a half of me just ranting about like an idea that I had. And that, like I said, like, from the moment that I seen this on Instagram, like, the Not Even D2 shit with Mark, I seen Marcus reposted it. Shout out Marcus. He reposted the episode with Darius, and I seen it. I was like, bro, this is a great idea, bro. This is a great idea. And then from then on, like, when the early stages, when we had Tasia, Sam Peak, Coach Hastings, Coach Arsenal, like, those days, and like them supporting us, like, yo, like, you guys got a, like, a really good thing going here. So, like you said, it's crazy to see where it has gone, but it's also, like, I know, keep in the back of our head that, like, we're not finished and, like, there's a lot of more work to be done.
Yeah. I mean, like, looking through, you mentioned Coach Hastings and Tasia, but some things that people didn't get to see, we recorded episodes, like, I'm thinking of the early days when we really first started. Nobody knows about, you know, we're recording with Adam Enders or we're recording with Luke Bergolt. And those, like, looking back, we were the worst podcasters, like, that have a podcast. It was so bad. And it's crazy, like, when I listen to an episode with Coach Hastings and seeing that to now we're recording, I'm not going to spoil who we're recording with and dropping with in the future, but with high name people, and we're doing, like, we're continuing to elevate our platform and getting better in this space. And that's something I definitely love. And before we continue on, I mean, quick shout out to my mom, my dad, and my little brother, because when I was floating the idea around, like, I want to start a podcast, a lot of people were like, oh, that's a good idea, that's cool. But those three were really the people in my corner giving me like real criticism, telling me. I showed my mom a few intros ideas, and she was like, that's not good. That's not good. You sound like a robot on this one. So my family definitely the reason that we were able to start something so special like that. So big shout out to all of them. And also anybody who's supported the podcast, listened to an episode, shared one of our reels on social media. A lot of respect to all of them. But I mean, I want to talk about a few episodes. First one, Casey Curran. This one was really big for me. That's really my boy, someone that I will always have the ultimate respect to for being the first guest. I believe that he was a little nervous too, but we had a really good conversation about like Alfred basketball, and he was the person that allowed me to, you know, kind of get out of my comfort zone and push me like, yo, when we doing the episode, or yo, when you post an episode, because that was even something I was a little worried about. So big shout out to Casey. And then it really became a thought in my head that like, this is a good idea. When I had Bob Coleman on the podcast, like there's actually a fan base that loves Division III and support Division III and know a ton about Division III. And this is not a division that is just like people don't care about. There are a ton of people that understand the talent, and that although the narrative is that it's not the highest level, this is one of the best brands and best models in all of college sports. And then the last one, definitely got to spin back on your episode, because that one, even though I wasn't that good at podcasting, you were a great guest, and it really was the groundwork for something that we would continue, something that I look back on and just like, yeah, that's the point right there, February 8th, that the podcast started to go up a little bit. So those would be my three picks. I'm interested to kind of hear from you on some of your top three.
Well, first of all, what people don't know about my episode, that is actually, we actually redid that episode. The first one, I'm just going to put it out there, bro. Or maybe it was StreamYard messed up the camera or something like that. So you couldn't see me.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's kind of funny too. That episode did turn out good regardless. But I mean, you gave some shout outs too. I definitely got to give a shout out to all my fam, like mom, you know, like I said, I had conversations with her about, you know, because she's asking me, what do I want to do with my life? And I'm presenting her with this idea, you know what I'm saying? And she was all for it from day one. She was all for supporting me. Like all my friends at Utica, for sure. Like all them boys, like they really supporting the pod, and like they love what I'm doing, and like they always want to hear about the next guest, like Luke. Definitely shout out Luke, first guest that we ever talked to together, I'm pretty sure, because Enders was the next.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, a big shout out. I don't know if he's ever going to see this, but Professor Croft from Utica University, he lets me use the space that I have now that I think everyone comments on, like when they when they get on air, they're like, yo, Bruder got a nice little spot. But he lets me use this space, man. I wouldn't be where I am without him. So I definitely shout out him. But some episodes that I think back on with a lot of that I cherish, and that when I think about. So first off the top of my head, Coach Kimbrough. Coach Kimbrough's episode is a really good one. Talking to a coach like Coach Kimbrough, who has been to the national championship before. He'd been to a Final Four, won ODAC championships, right? Coached a lot of really high-level players. But just his mindset, I think, helped us, like, SOE, like, standard of excellence. Like, all right, so, like, we want to hold ourselves to that type of standard, like, be the best that we can be, you know, put in max effort when we're, like, interviewing people or doing the reels. But definitely that episode was really cool. The next one I thought was really cool was Sam Peake. Sam Peake, man, he's a good dude. He's a great dude, man. It was a great conversation with him. And I think that was like also when I realized like, damn, this can go really far, because that Sam Peake episode just took off. Mm-hmm. Like, especially on Instagram, like everybody was like, yo, this is fire. Like, and I feel like that's really what got like kind of the momentum rolling. What people like really understand, like, all right, this is some heat. And then the last episode that I cherish a lot, I think the episode with Coach Crotty was really cool. I know you're having technical difficulties with that, but I think like the message, especially about like his dad and like his connection to his dad, was like really cool. Especially because, like I said, we filmed that episode on my dad's birthday. So like him talking about how much love that he had for him was like, it was definitely like an emotional and like real, like intimate conversation that we had with him. So it was just like a memorable one that I won't forget. So probably those three episodes off the top of my head, bro.
Yeah. Just the fact that we've had, I think it's like 44 episodes so far, and those definitely stick out to me as well. But big shout out to anybody that's been on the podcast, because one, that's a little nerve-wracking for them putting themselves out there. We asked some personal questions at times, like Coach Crotty got emotional on the podcast, which was definitely something I'll remember for a while. But like it's not easy being a podcast guest either, so definitely appreciate everyone that's helped us out. And but like I said, we're getting all sentimental looking back on things as if it's like the end or something. It's nowhere near that. Like we got a lot coming up. There might even be an episode dropped in the next few days that might take off as well. We got some big things coming. We're excited to get it all out to you guys and appreciate all the support from everyone. How this episode, the rest of this episode will be, we'll have like 5 to 7 minutes of some of the most memorable episodes. We'll have definitely Casey's episode will be in here, but we didn't have any like film during that time. So it'll just be a black screen, or I'll put some like pictures up. But I'm curious what people remember about the podcast, the usual viewers, what they think should be in the next like 20, 30 minutes. But hope you enjoyed the nostalgic throwbacks and appreciate you guys for tuning in to another episode. Let's hear from Casey Curran. Got my boy Casey in the building. How you doing today?
I'm good. How you doing, KJ?
Chilling, bro. Ready to get this premiere episode going?
Sir, I'm excited.
Yes, sir.
I wouldn't say it's locked in more than others. We just know, like, it's going to be a battle the whole night.
Yeah, 100%.
Because like, every team, you know, if we've seen it, if we come out, we're not ready to go. Like, it's a close game. We could lose. It happened against Cuca 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We won by 40.
I want to talk about that a little bit.
So Cuca 2 years ago was your freshman year, my sophomore year. So we had to reschedule the game, I think, because of COVID or something. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, I don't know why, we don't do the schedule, but we had to play them back-to-back days. We had to play them on a Tuesday and on a Wednesday.
One at Alfred. The first day was at Alfred. Second game was at Cuca.
That first day, so on Tuesday, we won by like 40.
Yeah.
40.
Beat the
brakes
off them.
Yeah, and this just shows you how crazy basketball is sometimes. Next day, we go up to Cuca and we lose the game.
We lose.
Yeah, we won. Like, it's not like we won by 10, 20. We won by 40. Like, it wasn't even close. And then the next day, we go up there and lose. So that just shows you, like, when we're saying we're more locked in for the other games, it's not exactly that. But if you don't come locked in, it's going to be a long 100%. Night no matter who you're playing.
And I feel like that taught me a lot. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Freshman year, I've never seen something like that. Like, you play teams in your league twice, and then if you beat one of them by 40, you're going into the next game automatically thinking, like, I'm not even going to try. Like, we're about to beat the brakes off them again.
Yep.
And then when Cuca came, or we went to Cuca and they beat us, I was like, okay, yeah, like, you got to take – it doesn't matter what happened in the matchup one. Matchup two, you got to come even harder and be even more locked in, a scout team, all of that.
Yep.
So, like – yeah, that was a big teaching moment for me.
Yep. Every game, like, it matters. It doesn't matter the other team's record. It doesn't matter any of that. Everybody has players that can, you know, put the ball in the basket. So you got to be ready to go.
I feel like that's a very big point that you made, that oftentimes you're in high school and you hear Division III and you're like, oh, those guys are bums, or I will never go to a Division III school, until you get to a Division III school and you're, wow, this is way better than what my high school played. These kids are way better than me. I got to lock into how they play and develop my game to be able to compete with them.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's why I do what I do, because the level of basketball is outstanding. You know, if you like basketball, to me, Division III, like, I like watching Division I basketball. Don't get me wrong. I love the tournament every year. It's incredible athleticism. To me, as far as pure basketball goes, I think Division III is the best level. I really do. I believe that in my heart. I'll also say I think the high school thing depends on geographically what part of the country you're in, because in the Midwest, Division III has, I believe, a stronger brand. So high school kids in the Chicago area and high school kids in Wisconsin and Indiana and Ohio, Iowa, I believe that they think Division III is high level basketball. Oh, so wow. When they're getting recruited by D3, they think of that favorably. Where I believe out east, I think there's a little less like D3 brand. And so that I can't prove all that, but I do know in the Midwest that high school kids look favorably on D3 schools. Yeah.
We talked about the addition of some SUNY schools, and next year we got Brockport and Geneseo additions to the conference. What is the process of adding a team into your conference or a sport into your conference?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways that it could sort of unfold. In this particular case, those institutions reached out. I know the ADs very well. Brockport was an affiliate for us in football, still is now until next year. Then they'll be a core member, but for many years. And I've had good relationships with both of those directors. And, they said, we're really interested in applying to the Empire 8. And so at the time that they contacted us, we couldn't add a state institution as a core member. Our constitution said that we were only comprised of private members. So that was the first step, was, okay, let's see if, the conference feels like this is the right time for us to start accepting state institutions. And so it was. And so from there, we have an application that they need to provide, various information, made a campus visit to meet with leadership, to look at facilities, kind of do an overview of all of that. And then, the presidents and the ADs have, all that documentation to look at to make that decision. So, the ADs and the presidents were both supportive of state institutions, and, they were all supportive of these two institutions as well. Again, when you look at our goal of being more regional, they fit great into our geography. They're strong academic institutions, competitive teams. And those are the kinds of things that conferences tend to look for, when they're trying to add institutions, they want to enhance, will they make us more competitive? Yes. Okay. Will they enhance our academic profile? Yes. Do they have a good location? So it's kind of going through that sort of process.
So are there anything specific that you're trying to do within this podcast?
I think honestly, KJ, the sky's the limit for this podcast. Like, I think, as much work as we're about to put into it, already, us going back and forth, texting, trying to plan, it's going to be hectic, but, I think we're going to put a lot of work into it, and I think we're going to receive the benefits from that. So the sky's the limit with this podcast, bro. I'm not going to put any limits on us. I'm not, obviously we have goals, and, we want this to become a big thing, but I think the sky's the limit, man.
Yeah, nah. For those who don't know, but like doing this by myself, I've put a lot of hours in already, and I'm already knowing that Root is going to make my life a lot easier, but he's also going to be working hard. So just know that we're going to keep improving each episode, and it might start off pretty like I'm interrupting Root when he's trying to talk or something like that, but we're definitely going to get that connection to where we're one of the top podcasts. I'm already knowing.
Yeah, bro. We're going to be good, man. I just think, obviously I'm the one who hit, I hit you up about, joining this podcast because of what you built, bro. Like you started something special, bro, with giving a voice to D3 athletes, coaches, or commissioners. Like that's not heard of in multimedia, bro, and social media, like in this day and age, bro, our voice is not heard like that. So for you to think like, oh, I want to give, these athletes a story because it's interesting enough to talk about, then I commended you for that. And I wanted to, jump on this with you, bro.
Something unique about yourself is you practice Sikhism. You wear the turban during the games, something, head cap over your hair. I don't know how you want to describe it, but talk a little about your religion and what the turban means to you.
Yeah, man. So the turban and my Sikh religion, it really is at like the core of who I am. So growing up, come from a very like religiously dedicated family. So I grow up wearing the turban, and our community is very, very tight knit. And so a lot of the community has immigrated from, so we come from the Punjab region of India, which is northern India. Some of it's in Pakistan as well. But we come from that region, and a lot of Sikhs immigrated kind of in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so, you know, in every city, there's a pretty good Sikh population. In Canada, there's a huge Sikh population, both in Toronto and Vancouver. And so the community is very tight-knit because, you know, there's not a lot of us. And so growing up, the Sikh community just meant a lot to me. And, you know, the turban, really what it is, we call it like the dastar is the name in Punjabi. It kind of represents all the values of our religion. And so, you know, something that means a lot is like within our religion, like the warrior kind of identity and mentality is a big thing. So historically, our religion started in the, you know, late 15th century, early 16th century. And we kind of created this unique identity. Our founders have kind of created this unique identity of challenging the, you know, the social and political norms of the time and kind of preaching this idea of like oneness and equality. And it was a very unique kind of idea at the time. And as we kind of gained a community and starting to establish kind of our own sovereignty, there was a lot of pushback from, you know, the existing rulers of the time, which is like the Mughal Empire. And so historically, throughout the, you know, 15, 16, 17, really throughout our whole history, there's been a lot of conflict and challenging of our own identity. And so we've had to fight for a lot on the battlefield and everything. And so, and all the way, you know, up until today, there's a lot of political tensions even that's kind of ingrained in who we are. And so this turban was given to us. It was historically, it was a symbol of royalty. So kings would wear turbans that you see like the Middle Eastern or like Muslim kings that would wear these turbans as a symbol of royalty. And so for us, our community wasn't made up of so-and-so kings. You know, we came from all different farmers, different castes in India. But this turban and this identity was given to us to elevate us to this kind of sovereign identity. And so actually, if you know, my last name, Singh, every Sikh boy or male should have the middle or last name Singh. And every Sikh female should have the middle or last name Gaur. And that was kind of given to us as kind of the same idea, where Singh means lion or tiger, and Gaur means, you know, female warrior, princess. And so these types of labels and this image was really given to us to make us realize the power and sovereignty that we had. But it's also a symbol of, you know, you have this responsibility of enforcing this justice, but also enforcing this idea of equality and oneness among us. And so for me, growing up wearing a turban, being the only one wearing a turban, that's not anything new in our history. You're almost supposed to be unique. That's why it was given to us. But growing up, it really represents that fight, that warrior identity, that my responsibility, you know, just as a Sikh. Yeah, all that is kind of summed up in this. And so it's really a representation of who I am.
So what kind of went into the decision for you to transfer to Stetson for your last year?
Yeah, so after my senior year, I had an extra year of eligibility because my junior year was COVID. So after that, I was always like thinking about maybe just putting my name in the transfer portal and see if anything came of it.
So I, you know, spoke to my family, spoke to my coaches, and I did. And I put my name in the portal just to see, because I always knew Wesleyan was a great fallback option for me. And I was even torn between going to Wesleyan and going somewhere else. Like, I loved Wesleyan, loved Coach Riley, loved the system. But yeah, I put my name in the portal and got like 10 plus Division I offers in like the span of like a week and a half, 2 weeks. And I was like, whoa, like, all right, now I got to make a decision, you know? And it was tough. It was like, do I go back to Wesleyan where I know I can have a great year and be, you know, play it safe almost, or do I go take a chance at a Division I school and maybe only score 6-7 points a game, and maybe it turns out to be great, and maybe it turns out to be terrible, you know? So I took a chance, and I mean, yeah, I can't imagine not going to Stetson. Like, it just set me up for pro basketball, you know, in general. Just the size and the speed. Like, if I was able to go from a Division III, like Ryan Terrell did, is what he did is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, he went from that Division III and then just got thrown into the G League, which is, yeah, I mean, that's and he wild. Played, he was playing well, too. He was playing, like, 15 minutes a game last year.
Yeah.
And that's my guy, and he can really hoop. And, but, yeah, so it was crazy.
Doing research on you, Ruta and I, like, came across that in every game you're wearing a headband, and we saw that your nickname is actually Headband Joe. So I'm kind of curious where that nickname, how that came about, and like why you continue to wear a headband throughout these years.
Yeah, so I go back. So at Augsburg, I kind of wore a headband a few games, just kind of like experimented with it, and then I get to Colorado State and I didn't wear it, and I didn't want to like. I don't know. I just didn't want to be too flashy when I first got there. And then my grandma couldn't see me on the TV, so I tried wearing yellow shoes. And then she still couldn't see me on the TV. She couldn't find which one I was. So I started wearing a headband again. And she's like, now I can see you because you're the only one wearing a headband. So I was like, all right, I'll keep wearing the headband. And then from that moment on, I did like a little interview with people from CSU and then kind of told them that story. And then they just kind of like fell in love with that. And then from that moment on, I was like, oh, Headband Joe, like, good dude. He cares about his grandma. Like, kind of like that. So,
shout out to grandma, though. Shout out to all the grandmas listening.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
But, you know, during that year, Headband Joe kind of went viral, at least in Colorado State. But even like during the tournament and stuff, I was aware of it. The announcers talking about it. So, January 30th, it's your birthday. You guys are playing against a great team in San Diego State in the Mountain West, and there's 2,500 headbands handed out to students that are at the game. And in honor of Joe Palmer, or to kind of relate to Joe Palmer. So what was that crowd like for you? And talk a little about that game and how that feels, knowing that you had such an impact on Colorado State.
Yeah, man, that was, I mean, that's the stuff you'd like, I'll never forget, like that moment. Like, it was a lot of pressure for sure leading up to it. And obviously, you know, you want to do something crazy and like play really well. But I just remember too, just like seeing like a lot of like the kids and stuff like that after the game and whatnot, and just like them all wearing headbands or like trying to like their parents bought them headbands and stuff. So that was cool. And just like the impact that, like, I don't know, like if you're a genuine dude, you can kind of have. But that game was like, I never like asked for that stuff, you know what I mean? Like the theatrics of it and like the outside stuff, like the outside noise. And it just kind of like came along with it. Like, I just wanted to play. That's all I wanted to do. And then so like when stuff like that happens, it just, when it's like happens naturally like that, and like people just do stuff for you, it feels pretty good. So
yeah.
All right, we're here with Coach Rainiac. How you feeling today, Coach?
Doing well, brother. Doing well. Looking forward to talking with you guys. I finally got on here, you know, a couple legends before me. So I feel good.
So I think this is an interesting discussion, too, just about the transfer portal. And I was, when we were doing research for this episode, I listened to one of your interviews with the D3 Datacast guys. Shout out to them. And you talked about how you could see, you know, D3 schools becoming feeder schools to Division I and even possibly to Division II level. And, you know, it made KJ and I kind of wonder, how can coaches prevent high transfer rates and create programs that entices students to have, you know, the amazing four-year experience that is Division III basketball.
Yeah. I've thought about this a lot, and I really think it boils down to one thing, and it's the relationships. If you're a coach that is strictly transactional, meaning, hey, you're good, get stats, great, whatever, but not vested in the student athlete themselves and kind of knowing, you know, just really kind of wrapping, knowing family, knowing, building a culture of a program, you know, and you still might lose kids, but you might not lose, you're not going to lose as much. I think if you have a culture really developed where that student athlete knows that you genuinely care about their well-being, you're genuinely trying to help them benefit their opportunities, you're not limiting them, and really you have the support system around them, I think you can limit it. I still think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think, like, if you have a supportive system and a culture, a winning culture, and winning culture, I mean, not necessarily wins on the court, but really, like, you have players that really genuinely have awesome experiences. They come back for alumni days. They really, you have it kind of roll in those regards. You have an administration that really starts to really buy into what you're doing. I think then you can limit it.
Yeah.
If it's strictly transactional, being like, hey, I'm recruiting you. Okay, great. Go out there. And you don't talk to that kid for 2 months after the season, or you don't really care what, how they're doing in the classroom, or you don't care. You know, you're one of those coaches that really just is always on the road recruiting and not investing in your own program. Then you're going to lose them. I really do believe that. I think it will still happen. Yes. But, I think you have to develop that culture around you to really almost like insulate yourself from the outside noise, because you have to make that student athlete who averages 20 a game, who is an All-American, stay at home base rather than go to a Division I or D2. Then you better have everything in place being like, hey, you know, what you get here and how I can help you get to where you want to go, then I think you can keep them. But if you're not that type of coach, then you're going to lose them.
All right, we're here with Coach Kimbrough. How you feeling today, Coach?
I'm good, man. I'm hyped to be on the show with you guys.
So in the same interview, the guy's name is Dave McHugh, sorry, from D3 Hoopsville. Shout out to him and what he does. But you mentioned an interview with him that in the early stages of your tenure at Hampton Sydney, you had to create accountability and a strong foundation for the culture you wanted. Talk a little bit about that process and how you uphold that to this day.
Well, I could talk to you guys about this for probably a couple hours. This is the bread and butter. Here's the real man, right? Come here, Gibby. I was the podcast, so we'll be quick.
Oh,
this is the real man behind
Gibby.
What's up? Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was good.
We're recording right now.
Intramural champion.
My bad, guy. I didn't know.
Nah, that's the boy, Gibby.
That's the man right there. That's the associate head coach.
Okay.
Bryson Gibson. But no, I think the culture piece is it's the piece that I get really excited about, honestly, with coaching in general. Because to your point with what you said, it was about creating a foundation that we could build the culture on is basically what I was trying to say, is like, how do we create this unbreakable foundation? And, you know, it's all about like somebody's why, like, how do you create this foundation where somebody's going to want to execute when they don't feel good, when they're not motivated? Right. And that always goes back to everybody's why. So it's like, how do we create this team vision that's going to be this foundation? And so we did. We created like our vision for our team. This is to be the standard of excellence in Division III basketball. Mm-hmm. And it's not like be number one in the country or be number one in the ODAC or win a certain amount of games. It's like to be the best version of yourself. That's the expectation every day, regardless if you're injured, sick, manager, scout team, starter, doesn't matter. How can we be the best version of ourselves? How do we beat that version every day? Constant growth mindset. It's something that's our foundation. That's like our driving force in the morning. Every morning we wake up, and if it's like 6 a.m., you think about like what's your why individually, and then I got to be what we call SOE. I got to be a standard of excellence, man. I got to be the best version of me. So if I'm not, and we associate those things with, well, we have these goals in mind. To achieve these goals, we have to be the standard of excellence. We have to focus on that. And so then the accountability piece came in by including the team and creating values and standards that, you know, I did this with the team. This was not like, so I didn't come in and say, hey, this is our culture. I came in and said, man, we got to have this foundation of how we work, this like driving force, but then we need to create these standards and values together, because if we do that, then we're all going to be accountable. And then we need to go tell everybody about them, because then if the more people that know, the more we're going to be held accountable to what we said. Mm-hmm. That, I learned that while I was here. I mean, I've had help. Like, this isn't just, you know, these are tons of people helping kind of guide this process. And it's been absolutely amazing, guys. Like, you should bring it to your teams, I think, in some form or fashion. But like including the entire team, it's a process in itself, and it could be annoying at times. But even if you, hey guys, what do we want to achieve this year? Awesome. How are we going to do that? Let's come up with like 2-3 of the main ways we're going to do that. And let's all agree on it. And then let's tell everybody about it. And all of a sudden what you find is, man, we've created this shared accountability towards what we want to do. Mm-hmm. If anybody doesn't do that, it's no longer like me versus you, Ruta, or me versus you, KJ. That's how our program operates, man. This ain't personal. This is just what we're trying to do. And you told me this is what we got to do to achieve these goals. So it's been, you know, there's a lot more to it. I could get into depth with like what all these things are, but that was that talk. Is we came in, we realized like we can't just tell these guys what to do. Why would they trust me? You know, trust takes time. You got to develop a relationship with somebody, right? To develop trust. And like right now, if I just became y'all's coach and I just told you what to do, you know, it's like, that's not, why would you believe in that right away? Like, we'd have to get to know each other. But if you come up with it together, not only is that developed relationship, but it also is something that's shared. And so we thought that was going to be the best way for us to kind of build something that was unbreakable. And we feel like it's been great for us the past 3 years.
KJ and I have been having this like back and forth discussion, and it is a discussion. It's not really a debate, because I think KJ agrees with me when I say this, but so I have like a little bit of a theory that I'm going to say now that I've been telling him off air.
Let's get it.
I feel like when it comes to, you talked about how like Division III and Division I, there's not much really of a difference, right, in the level of play. But my theory really is that you could take any Division III player that is either all conference or an all American, and I think that they could go to a Division I team, most either mid or low majors, and like be either a starter or like a really high level playing role player on a Division I team. What do you think about that theory? And just talk to us about that.
That's not a bad take, actually. That's not, but like at the same time, wait, are you taking like you say you're taking like an all American Division III player?
Yeah. So like really what I'm thinking of is like, so if you take, let's say, MIAC, NESCAC, I think like our conference, Empire 8, what other conferences, like the ODAC, the YAC, right?
Yeah,
the YAC, like any of those like first team guys that are on like those all conference selections, or even like I said, all Americans from D3hoops.com, NABC, like any of those guys that's selected to the teams, I feel like can go and play at the Division I level, at least get role player to starter minutes and like be productive.
I can see role player minutes. I can see role player. But right away, I can't see starter for a lot of the guys.
Okay.
And I can't see like the dude for like a lot of the guys. Like you go in there and like you're literally shooting every shot, like you're in the all conference. But I could definitely see role player and like high role player to where like they're contemplating putting you in at the end of the game for like one of the starters type of thing.
So I'm just a little curious about this, Coach. Like you mentioned your old coach, Dave Paulson, he had a saying, earn your platform. And I'm wondering this, how did you earn your platform at for your player development role with the Celtics? Because like you said, you were a young assistant coach. You were writing. I know you said you weren't instructing them maybe on the game, right, because they are NBA players, but you were writing scouting reports, you know, and doing all the basketball stuff. So how did you do that with those guys?
Yeah, I think it's some of those characteristics I mentioned earlier when we talked about Williams. Like, you better be humble in that environment, right? Like, there's a lot of accomplished athletes. I think showing up every day, doing your job, not being cocky about it, and building trust. And I think, like anything, and as I try to do now, when I get to know my players, but when you get to know those guys, if you get to know them off the court and you show up every day and you develop a rapport, then they trust you and they understand that, you know, hey, you probably have this job for a reason too. Like Danny Ainge drafted you because you're good. He also offered me a job because he saw some qualities in me that he thought could be helpful to our organization. So I think showing up every day, being the same guy every day, stacking those days one after the next, then you earn your trust, you know. And a story I told on one other podcast many years ago, but a time, those first 2 years, we weren't very good. We were very young and we lost a lot of games. And those guys were easier to kind of get to know. I was the same age or a little bit older. The next year, when we got Kevin and Ray and Posey and Eddie House, PJ Brown, I mean, we were 66 and 16. We won it. Now, we go to Rome and London for a training camp, which was amazing, traveling the world a little bit. And the team really bonded. And there was one great night, myself and one of the strength coaches went out to dinner with the guys, kind of younger coaches. It's a night off, big meal, drinking some wine. And it was just cool to be a part of with those guys. And, you know, nights like that, you'll never forget. Then we had an exhibition game in Worcester. We used to play one in the other New England cities, you know, Providence, Hartford, wherever. So in Worcester, it's really warm, even though it's October. Guys were sliding all over the court. Lawrence Franklin, the Nets, and Doc said, hey, let's shut it down after halftime. They didn't finish it. So everybody's kind of, they're just signing autographs, trying to be nice to the fans. And so I go into the shower. It's like a bathroom shower. The facilities were not like the NBA facilities at the DCU Center. And I don't think anyone's in there. I'm just splashing some water on my face. I'm sweating through my suit. I mean, it was really warm. And I realized the big ticket, which is what I call the ticket, Garnett's kind of coming out of the shower and got a towel around his waist. He's drying. I'm like, at that point, I'd still been around the guy for a month, but he still kind of like had an aura. Like, you know, the word awesome is overused in our language. He's awesome. Like, he kind of keeps you in awe when you're near him. And so I'm like, I want to get out of here. He's going to get dried. And he's like, hey, Mike. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, how old are you? And I'm like, you know, I talked to him a little bit. And I'm like, you know, I just turned 26. He's like, okay. He's like, you know, I see you every day, you know, showing up, doing your job. He's like, there's a lot of people around here that like to run their mouths just to hear themselves speak. And you're quiet and you're doing your thing. He's like, I think you're going to be a great coach someday. And I was like, wow, you know, Kevin Garnett, you know? And I said, well, hey, ticket, I appreciate that. Thank you. And he said, ain't no effing compliment. It is what it is. And he said it really quick. And I said, all right, well, coming from you to me, that's a compliment. So I appreciate it. He said, that's what's up. And, you know, I was getting ready to leave. And I said, all right, well, now he likes me a little. I'm going to show him my personality. I said, well, hey, Ticket. I said, you know, I've been watching you the last month a lot, the way you were watching me. And, you know, he had said, I've been watching you when you didn't even know I was watching you. And I said, I've been watching you when you didn't know I was watching you. I said, I think if you keep it up, you're going to be a hell of a player someday. And he goes, oh, you're funny too. He's drying out. I was like, you got jokes. And so we kind of laughed. And the next day he came in and creatures of habit. He's dapping all the coaches up. And he called every coach by name. He's like, what up, Mike? He's like, oh, no. He's like, you got to see it to believe it. What up, coach? And when he dapped me up, he called me coach. And then the whole year he called me coach. And that's a little thing that he probably wouldn't remember. But as a 26-year-old aspiring coach, Kevin Garnett's calling every coach on the staff by name and calling me coach. I didn't hate that. You know, he was good to me, Paul, they were all really good. And I think I appreciated the fact that I had spent 5 weeks around Kevin Garnett, just doing my job, keeping quiet, throwing passes, trying to soak it up, do a scout here, whatever we got. And the fact that he saw a little something there for a guy like him, that meant a lot then at that time. So, yeah, it was a great experience. And obviously getting a championship ring with the hometown team I grew up rooting for, with my name on it. Jeez, that's it. That was a great experience. And, that was mission accomplished for my time with the Celtics.
Ruta mentioned earlier your Hall of Fame class of 2023. It was a legendary class, arguably the best ever. In my humble opinion, I think it is the best ever, just the depth throughout. So I'm going to read who you were inducted with. You were inducted into Hall of Fame with Tony Parker, Dwayne Wade, Dirk Nowitzki, Paul Gasol, Coach Popovich, Jimmy Valvano, Becky Hammon. So just literally GOATs. And I want to hear from you how it felt, like sharing such a special moment, being inducted to Hall of Fame with a bunch of other greats, not only alongside of you, but also in the building. Players like Allen Iverson, Tim Duncan were also there presenting. So just talk to me about, that night and the feeling of sharing the moment with them.
Yeah. And so we started down in Houston when they announced us. And then we, we moved on to down in Connecticut where they did the presenting of the ring and jacket, and then, the formal thing in Springfield the night of. But absolutely amazing. And one person spread to the other person. Guys like Mike Wilbon and guys like that I wanted to talk to that I never thought I'd get a chance to talk to, from PPI. And, it just kept expanding the group. I had a particular fond connection with the European guys. I think they're a little different, than the Americans they are. And it's just, they were the easiest guys to talk to. And again, I had to, have a little bit of, I don't know what you'd call it, gumption to get out there. You walk into a room and you see all these guys and you got to go over and say hi, and they were unbelievable to me, and I immediately felt like one of them. So we're down in Houston. And I think I'm just down there for a joyride. I'm going to get introduced and the whole thing. And we have a dinner the night before. They haven't announced this yet. So it's all secret. We're all being taken by a bus and hidden in this place. And I'm talking to Cal. I'm relaxed. Like I'm just soaking it all in. I'm having a great time talking to these guys. I got no worries in the world. So I said to Cal, I said, well, this is really cool. And he said, well, you're talking tonight, right? I said, hello. Talking tonight. I was really relaxed, and all of a sudden put my drink down, stopped drinking wine, and started saying, like, what am I talking about? Like, what? He said, we're gonna introduce you and you get to tell the story and blah 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 blah. And it was really fun. It was fun to listen to all those guys and their stories. And I got a chance. Alvin Hayes, the name Alvin Hayes, the Big E?
Yeah.
Okay, played for Houston, right?
Yep.
Very first game ever played in a football stadium was Houston versus UCLA. It was like 1969 or seven. I think it was seven. And I had to get permission from my parents, ask them, could I stay up and watch this in black and white? It was black and white TV. It was an hour late or 2 hours late because it was in Houston. Lou Alcindor back then, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. Some great players on both sides, but the Big E and Houston upset them. And he was at that. And so I get a chance, and this is how I am sometimes. If I could just break the ice, I'm good. Right, you got to get the first words flowing, right? I turned around and I said, Big E, you are one of my heroes. I'm going to tell a little story about that. And I got to tell a story. As my wife will tell you, I could tell stories. So one thing led to the other. And finally, I was pretty comfortable, in talking with this group of guys. And one thing led to the other. We went from there. And then we came back to Springfield. And I got a chance to really spend some time with these guys. And one of my great moments was standing in between Gasol and Dirk. And, they're both, I didn't realize how tall they were until I saw a picture of me standing. And, they're both like this, right? And so it was an unbelievable experience. And they are really, those guys are just really good down to earth guys, and huge celebrities, but boy, just great guys.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.